Welcome to Nutrition for Me on UK Health Radio, your global feel-good radio. Today's show is brought to you in association with Revive Active, our show sponsor, Ireland's number one super supplement brand. Enjoy Revive Active's range of super supplements and feel great. Revive Active have teamed up with UK Health Radio to offer listeners an exclusive discount so you can test their supplements for yourself and start to feel super. Just go to reviveactive.com and use promo Radio 20 to get 20% off their entire range, including Junior Revive and Teen Revive. You can find out more about Revive Active on their website, reviveactive.com. I'm Dora Walsh, personalized nutritional therapist and functional medicine practitioner, supporting you to overcome your health problems such as obesity, low immunity, chronic fatigue, skin conditions, digestive problems, out of control cravings, and much more. Join me each week as I delve into the fascinating world of health and nutrition, focusing on the most important tips and nutritional advice that can really help in our quest for health, energy, and longevity. This week, we're talking about super nutrition for super kids. Nutrition for kids is a topic that's really close to my heart. I've seen the effects of inadequate nutrition in both adults and children, and I'm constantly reminded of how we are what we eat. Our diet is a major determiner of health, and that's why it's so important to prioritize nutrition from an early age and think about what our kids and our adolescents are eating so we can help them to thrive. Poor nutrition during childhood is associated with an increased risk of obesity, hypertension, diabetes, and coronary heart disease. But the good news is we can arm ourselves with the knowledge of how to nourish our kids and the nutrients needed throughout their key stages of childhood and adolescence so we can help them reach their full potential and set up those healthy eating habits for life. Our show's sponsor, Revive Active, is also playing a role in children's nutrition. As a company that provides supplements for all stages, it's really no surprise that they've formulated easy, convenient, but highly effective nutrition support for kids from 4 years and up. We're talking about super nutrition for super kids, and this week, here to share her expertise with us is Emma Shafcutt. Emma is a registered pediatric dietitian and nutrition consultant specializing in the needs of children. Having worked in the NHS dealing with children's chronic disorders through to working with schools and private clients, Emma's experience covers the entire gambit of children and teens' nutrition. She's the founder of Dietitian with a Difference, providing resources and advice to private clients with nutritional needs. And she's also a parenting expert on BLOSS, which is an app that connects parents to expert advice. She's also a speaker on various podcasts. Welcome to the show, Emma. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm really excited to be here.
Heard good things about you, Emma. And I know you're an expert in children's nutrition. You're a pediatric dietitian. I'm always interested in people's stories, all the different nutritionists and dietitians and experts that come on the show, also supplement founders. And I always ask them to tell us about their specialist work. Tell us about your work as a pediatric dietitian. You've worked in the NHS and you have your own private clinic. What led you into this important work?
I actually retrained when I was 30. I used to work in events and marketing, and I got more and more interested in nutrition. So I took the maybe slightly crazy route, decided to go back to university for 4 years and retrain as a dietitian. Then I've worked, like I said, in lots of NHS roles. And then I specialized more in pediatric in the NHS. And then since then, founding Dietitian with Difference, I've worked with a whole host of clients from newborn little babies right through to sort of 18-year-olds as well. So I help children. I specialize mainly in like fussy eating, food allergies, but yeah, I help with everything in between. And I'm also a mum who had a little preemie baby who had severe reflux and cow's milk allergy and basically screamed for about 3 months, absolutely hated weaning. So I found the whole experience really, really stressful. Yeah, and really didn't want to eat anything. So a lot of the strategies and a lot of advice that I give to my clients from a health professional, but also the reason I call myself sort of dietitian with a difference is that because I'm also a mum that's lived through the experience of having a child with allergies and a really fussy eater, I can also share sort of practical real life experience as well, rather than sometimes I think when you go and see a health professional, you're given the advice. But when you've actually lived it as a parent, it's a totally different experience.
It makes such a big impact when people speak with experience of actually having gone through it themselves. You're also a parenting expert, so it sounds like you've been able to use that nutrition knowledge with your own kids and supporting others as well. How have your experiences been as a mum? You've mentioned that your daughter had this reflux and she's a fussy eater. Have you been able to get over that hurdle?
Yeah, definitely. So the reflux was obviously linked more to, I think, the cow's milk allergy in the end. She did also have an egg allergy, which we found out when we started weaning as well. Yeah, I mean, the first 3 months of her life, because she was born early, we had to sort of feed her from the minute she was born because her blood sugar levels were too low. Yeah, so it was feeding was difficult. She didn't really want to be fed. So yeah, sort of had to be on a feeding regime of sort of every 2 hours or so to keep her weight up. So that was stressful. And then basically she just kept refusing the bottle, not wanting to feed, not wanting to, screaming all the time. And I remember being with friends of mine in the NCT group and they were lovely, but all their babies were just feeding and it was just so stressful. And they'd be like, oh, we'll try. And it was like, yeah, no. And in the end, we ended up in hospital because basically she just refused completely to have any milk and was just screaming all day. And then eventually that's when we were diagnosed with cow's milk allergy and we were put on a special formula. And it was like, and they said to us, oh, you know, it will be a couple of months and you'll see things will get better. And literally overnight she was like a different baby. And we were like, okay, this is what the problem has been. But I mean, I don't have a family history of allergies or anything else. I know my mum said that I was really colicky as a baby, so I do wonder whether maybe I did have cow's milk allergy as well, but in the 80s, I don't think there wasn't much known about those sort of things either. So, yeah, it was definitely a difficult journey, but the reflux did get better as she got older and her core developed, she got stronger. And then, in terms of weaning, I think because of she was almost like, I hate to say the word, but you know, almost like force-fed milk because obviously we had to keep her weight up and stuff like that. And obviously, she associated it with pain because of obviously the milk allergy. When it came to weaning, she just had no interest in food. She didn't put anything. I had to sort of spoon feed her and we put bits on things, but she didn't really put anything in her mouth. She didn't even put like toys really in her mouth. Like nothing went in her mouth. Like she had a real aversion to having basically anything near her mouth. And I think the turning point for us was that I did loads and loads of like food play and like messy play and stuff like that. We really interacted with food. But I also found her going to nursery made a big difference to us as well because, and it's something that I say to a lot of parents, is like children being around other children and watching other children eat can sometimes be a real game changer as well. So being at nursery made a really big difference to her eating as well. And then she was still very restrictive at this sort of, you know, when she was younger, and we obviously went through like what we call like the typical kind of neophobic stage around the toddler stage. And she's now 8, she's thriving, she's still tiny, she's on like the second centile, which is fine because that's where she's always been and she's sort of been tracking along that line. But she's never been a big eater or a real like food enthusiast or anything. So getting her to eat sort of large amounts of food or any amount of food's always been quite challenging. So I've always had to be really innovative and quite creative with her in terms of getting her to try new foods and interact with new foods as well. So we've come up with so many games over the years. I mean, one we did last year was all around Strictly Come Dancing. We did a whole food challenge around Strictly Come Dancing. So that was really fun. And that got her to try loads of new food. So we're going to try that again this year. But I think the more fun you can have with food and the more play you can have with food, I found for us has worked the best.
You have so much experience. I can see it coming through in your voice, Emma. It's lived experience. And obviously, you've studied this as well. So you're the first perfect person to talk about super nutrition for super kids, which is the topic of our show this week. And with such varied experience from being a mum to working in the NHS to your private practice, what's your personal opinion of the state of children's nutrition in the UK?
Yeah, this is definitely a difficult one. I think there was a report last year by Slackram in 2023 that talked a lot about like how children were having quite high amounts of sugar in their diet and they were having a lot of salt in their diet as well. And that obviously there's a big, and again, you can't not see it in the news about obesity and children being overweight as well. So yeah, I do think that children's nutrition could do with a lot more help and support at government level as well. And I know there's been big initiatives over the years, like with Jamie Oliver and stuff in school meals and things like that as well. But I still think there's a lot of work to be done. And I think there's a lot of food that's marketed at children as well, that's often not always the healthiest in terms of it's often got quite a lot of sugar and stuff in. But parents are often sort of persuaded that this is a healthy option because they write the word organic on it, or they write whole food, or they write something on it that parents then think. But actually, when you look at the ingredients, sometimes they're really high in. But I also, as a parent, know that when you're a busy parent, it's hard to, always cook everything. Every snack from scratch and everything as well. So I can see, why people rely on a lot of those snacks. But yeah, I think there's a lot that could be done to help children's nutrition in this country, particularly. And I think there's a lot, again, in that and report as well. They talked a lot about nutrients that children are low in, like iron and zinc and vitamin A and vitamin D as well, being major ones as well. So yeah, I think there's a lot. There were some positives from that report that showed that if children are really exposed to fruit and vegetables and things like that they can increase their variety of food as well. So I think there's lots of things we can do, but I think there is a lot of, work to be done as well.
It sounds like there's a big mountain to climb in terms of nutrition in the UK and people being misled by different marketing messages. You'll see organic written on it. I even get taken in myself, but as someone that's worked in nutrition for a long time, I see organic, I think wonderful, but then I still want to know what the ingredients are because it might be organic, but it might be white flour or high sugar. So you can get organic sugar, you see. So it's about having looking a bit deeper, isn't it?
And I think that nutrition's not really taught, is it, very much in, like, schools and stuff. I wish it was much more prominence in schools. I mean, I know my little girl's been doing cooking in school, which is great, but there's not much focus on nutrition in terms of learning about food or learning about cooking and stuff like that in schools. And I think a lot of people aren't taught some of the skills around being able to cook or reading labels and all of those things. And I think a lot of that could be taught more in schools as well.
It's a key life and health skill. Now that the media is shining a spotlight on the overconsumption of ultra processed foods in everyone's diet, particularly that of younger generations. And we hear a lot about this topic of ultra processed foods. But for our listeners today, what are ultra processed foods and why are they so detrimental for us and for our children?
So the simplest way I think of describing ultra processed foods is to basically say it's something that you aren't going to find in your kitchen cupboard. So things like if you see something like emulsifiers written on the back of ingredients, or you see lots of colorings or lots of additives, lots of things that you basically couldn't cook from scratch that wouldn't be in your kitchen cupboard, how I see it. I mean, in terms of detriments, I still think there's lots more. There's been obviously some big, like, doctors and other sorts who've written about ultra processed foods, and there's been quite a lot of scaremongering as well around it. And I agree completely that we should obviously be eating more whole grains and lots more fruits and vegetables and cooking everything from scratch as well. But I also think that some ultra processed foods can also play a part in your children's diet as well, because especially, for example, if your child has something like a cow's milk allergy, for example, then a lot of the milk, the like plant drink, like oat drinks or soya drinks or things like that, would be technically, because they've added vitamins to them, would be classified as ultra processed. So again, I think there's a little bit of nuance to it as well in terms of what. And again, like a lot of breakfast cereals, again, a lot of the children that I see who are like really restrictive eaters, if they were to cut out some of those like beige like breakfast cereals, they might be providing a lot of iron and a lot of zinc for them as well. So again, I think for parents, some of those foods are okay, and they're not, maybe remove them completely from the diet. So I think, there has been a lot of scaremongering in the press about ultra processed.
With those cereals, some of them are fortified. And in that case, for those fussy eaters, as you say, Emma, it might be the only way they can get some of those nutrients in, unless they're also supplementing.
Yeah, exactly. And it can be a really good way of getting some fiber as well, and extra things in. I mean, things like, I know, for example, Weetabix would be classified as ultra processed because it's got malt barley in it. But if you look at the rest of the ingredients, it's a pretty good option as a breakfast cereal for a lot of children. So, I think for parents, there's a lot of fear, I think, out there as well.
Yeah, it's good to be able to distinguish between the ultra processed foods that we think could be okay and then the ones that maybe aren't. And I like to think, obviously crisps, there's probably no not really any nutritional value other than they can maybe enjoying them. I guess the potatoes have a bit of vitamin C. So you kind of have just to be able to kind of want to sift things out and work out what is okay and what is something you probably want to be steering clear of.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree with you. And I think, yeah, some foods, obviously, like, sweets, like pure sugar sweet things, or like, things that have got hundreds of little, different ingredients in them, maybe something to avoid. But again, it all depends on your child and where you are as well in terms of their eating. And, some children that I work with are real extreme sort of fussy eaters, and maybe they're relying on that particular brand of yogurt. That maybe, yes, a plain yogurt would be a better option, but maybe at the moment that's where they are, and having that yogurt still giving them some calcium and iodine as well. So, it's all about moderation as
Yeah,
well.
some food is better than no food, and whatever you can get in. And sometimes it's hard. I've had the same with my daughter. Like sometimes I have to make compromises because I just need to get the food in.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you get in your clinic kids that are coming to you malnourished, but they don't look like they're starving? Does that ever happen to you? Like, so maybe you notice that they're low on nutrients, but maybe they've been overfeeding, but they're still malnourished. That's an interesting topic that I find comes up a lot.
Yeah, I see that a lot as well. But I also think for some parents as well, they're quite dismissed. So their child's weight might be absolutely fine. So even though they've got a real eating sort of disorder, or real what we call problem eaters, they're told, well, they're still tracking like the 50th centile, so they must be absolutely fine. But when you look at their diet, they're relying on, only like chips and chicken nuggets, and that's basically all they're eating. And then when, as part of my private practice, I offer full nutritional analysis, and then I look at their diet, and they've got like no zinc, they've got no iron in their diet, their iodine's really low, their calcium's really low, all their key essential nutrients are actually really, really low in, and like vitamin A and everything. And you look at it, and yeah, okay, their weight seems fine because they're tracking along, their centile, but nutritionally they're lacking lots of essential nutrients. And parents will come to you and say, well, they're really tired and they don't have any energy. And you think, well, yeah, no, because their iron is so low. I'm not surprised they've got. So, yeah, we see that a lot.
Yeah, but if they got on the scales, you think, oh, they're fine, they're tracking
Yeah.
okay, but we need to kind of look a bit deeper to see why is that child feeling so tired? And often it many times it can come down to the nutrients in their diet. They're lacking
Yeah.
those nutrients, and maybe they might have been having too many ultra processed foods, just relying on the macros, I like to call them, getting enough protein, getting enough carbohydrate, getting enough fat, but maybe from foods that are low in the micronutrients, like the vitamins,
Yeah.
minerals. So on one side they're doing okay, on the other side they're not. So is avoiding those UPFs, those ultra processed foods, achievable for them if you manage to get them onto a healthier diet with the right nutrients in?
Yeah, I think it all depends on obviously the child and how extreme the fussy eating is. But I think you can always make tweaks to children's diets, like even small little changes. I work with children, I do a process called something called food chaining, where it's about like a just noticeable difference and tiny little change. So sometimes it's about just improving the nutrient quality of the food that they're eating. So I might add things like if they have yogurt and they're happy to have like chia seeds added or something, that will give them a bit of magnesium, give them a bit of omega-3. So again, there's small little tiny changes that maybe we can do. Or if we can make the chicken nuggets at home and they're happy to have them with some oats on the top, and we can make them homemade with chicken, again, we can improve the nutrients. Sometimes little tweaks that we can make, and things like even with some children, like if they're really low in iron, but they like, for example, nut butters or peanut butter and things like that, again, maybe we can add those in. Or, there's lots and lots of ways that I work with them to sometimes make really small little changes that can really boost like that iron or zinc without them necessarily having to eat, a plate full of vegetables, when you're not going to get a child to necessarily jump from a chicken nugget to a plate full of, vegetable pasta with loads of, other lovely nutrients in it. So again, it's about making those tiny changes sometimes can
Little
make a big
steps.
difference.
Yeah, I love this approach, Emma, because it's so realistic. And I think all the mums and the dads will kind of kind of feel relieved because it's like sometimes people feel that they need to go from being like a walker to an Olympic athlete in the terms of their nutrition. You don't have to suddenly jump from just, having a bad diet to, eating something extremely healthy. You just make those little tweaks. And if those little tweaks every day over the medium and the long term, they really work. Say, like with my daughter, as I always use her as an example because I would love her to eat whole grain porridge in the morning, but it's just not going to happen. I just can't get it into her. She doesn't like it. So
No, exactly.
those fortified cereals, she's on them as well. And then I then sneak things in. I sneak nutrients in there. I put powdered probiotics in there and different things. I add a few little chia seeds, like I add flax seeds actually. And then she says, "Oh, what are all these little bits?" And I say, "Oh no, it's just part of the cereal." So you kind of just have to sneak it in where you can.
Yeah, and I think again, like getting them involved in the kitchen as well and helping you and talking about, and again, depending on the age of the child as well. My little girl's now 8, so again, her understanding is really, quite good. And I realized yesterday when we had a friend around that I was talking about like iron-rich foods, and my little girl obviously understands all of that because I talk about it all the time. And then her little friend was like, "What does that mean? What are iron-rich foods?" And I was suddenly like, "Oh yeah, no, most people won't talk about all nutrition and everything about food."
I really wish that this should be a conversation in school, shouldn't it? I mean, people,
Yeah.
this would be on the tip of their tongue. Yeah, I know the iron's from this, and I can get vitamin C from my fruits and vegetables. I can
Yep.
get iron from my meat and from some vegetable sources. So it's just going to be in their everyday language and their everyday knowledge, and they carry that through life, and they know then why they're eating. Obviously, we eat for
Yeah.
enjoyment, but we need to eat for nourishment and to keep ourselves healthy and so we develop well. Now we're going to be talking a lot more about super nutrition for super kids with Emma Shafkat from Dietitian with a Difference after a few messages from our commercial partners.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Dora Walsh on UK Health Radio on my show Nutrition for Me on our Global Feel Good Radio. I'm speaking with Emma Shafkat from Dietitian with a Difference, and we're talking about super nutrition for super kids. Now, Emma, we were talking about those UPFs, those ultra processed foods. There's a bit of a challenge there. Sometimes, it's the only thing we can give our kids, but we try and sift out the better ones from the ones that are not so good. And it's important that we shouldn't demonize people, as there are many reasons why people cannot reach that nirvana of perfect nutrition.
Definitely, yeah. I think it's, yeah, like we said before, it's all about moderation. And again, there's no point, demonizing parents or making them feel bad. I mean, it's hard enough being a parent as anyway. And I think the more we can just help and support parents, the better.
Now, what are the most common reasons why children could be missing out on nutrients?
Again, obviously, with what I see a lot is obviously with fussy eaters. So again, might be that there's a lot of like sensory issues around food as well. So I'm also a feeding therapist as well. So, and again, I see a lot of children who have sensory issues with textures and different foods. So again, sometimes that can restrict them and they find it really hard to eat in certain textures. So that can have a real impact on food, on the getting their nutrients that they need. Obviously, allergies as well. So for example, if you've got a child with a cow's milk allergy like mine, then obviously making sure that they're getting enough calcium in their diet and enough iodine as well. That can be a really key nutrient as well that they can be lacking as well. So those are probably the two main ones. And again, with children that I see as well are underweight as well. So again, they can be missing out on lots of key nutrients as well. I'd say the nutrient that I probably see the most in terms of children not getting is iron. It's meant to be the most common one. Lots of parents worry about protein, but most children in the UK, on pretty much all the children I see, are never protein deficient. It's normally things like iron in particular that we tend to see as the most common nutrient that children are deficient in. But also there's other things like zinc as well, quite common, and vitamin A, and obviously vitamin D as well, which obviously in the UK we normally have to rely on supplements for vitamin D in particular because we don't get very much sunlight, do we? So it's quite hard to get enough vitamin D from the sun.
Yes. Why do you think you're seeing these deficiencies? Obviously, with vitamin D, that's to do with, at some points there is less sunlight throughout the winter. And so obviously at the end of winter, one is the lowest point in vitamin D. But what about iron, zinc, and vitamin A? Why are we seeing these deficiencies?
Again, I think, again, especially with children with restrictive eaters, if they're not getting enough, like they're not eating any, for example, if they won't eat any kind of red meat, for example, with iron, obviously with heme iron, it's more easily absorbed in things such as red meat. Often they're not eating things like, lentils, chickpeas, things like that, again, that are high in iron. So often it's just looking at their diet and it's not really that they're accessing any of those high iron rich foods in their diet. Maybe they're relying on more, things like chicken nuggets that aren't high in iron at all, and then having any of those other foods in their diet as well. So that's often the main reason why I see it. It's just they're just not getting it. And normally then what I can do is work with them, and what we were talking about, like things like fortified breakfast cereals, for example, are really high in iron, having those nut butters in their diet. Sometimes it's not necessarily about trying to get them to eat, jump from a chicken nugget to something that's, like a bolognese or something that if they don't like sauces, for example. Some children are really, sensory and they don't like food mixing together, so they wouldn't have something like a bolognese or something like that. So again, it's just working and making small tweaks to make sure they get enough iron in their diet.
Working with that person and what you're dealing with there, then rather than getting them to eat a steak, I mean, that might come in time. So are these people vegetarians? Are they kids that are turning vegetarian and that's why they're low on iron? Or is it simply because their parents are maybe not aware that they should be having these foods in their diet, these iron-rich foods that you've mentioned?
I mean, obviously with sometimes with vegetarians, yeah, that can be more of a struggle. And obviously, they need the things like the lentils and the chickpeas and the alternatives as well. And then obviously the high vitamin C to help absorb the non-heme iron as well. But again, I think for people I see, it tends to be because they're just very restrictive. There might be sensory issues going on with food and textures and stuff. And the children just aren't at the stage or aren't able at the moment to eat that food. So I think often the parents I see are aware of what potentially iron-rich foods, the normal iron-rich foods that we know about, like, meat and things like that, but they don't necessarily know about alternative options that they could be adding in their diet to help boost the iron intake as well.
So walk us through these key stages of life for children. We've talked about and where we can see these nutrient deficiencies. We've talked about the babies and the cow's milk allergy. With those babies that can't have cow's milk, maybe they could potentially be low on calcium or vitamin D. And we've talked about that, and you experienced that with your own baby. And then we've had primary school children. You mentioned iron, which you talked about, but you also mentioned zinc and also calcium and vitamin D. Is it quite for the clients that come to you and for children in general, do you think these are quite common deficiencies?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, especially things like iron and zinc. I can normally, before I've even seen a child's nutritional analysis, I can be like, oh, they're probably going to be low in iron and zinc once they tell me roughly what they're eating. So yeah, I do see a lot of that, particularly at that age as well.
Zinc is so important for the immune system, and they need that nutrient for their development, so important, as well as vitamin D for immune system as well, and calcium for the bones. What about iodine? Is that I think that's one that you mentioned too.
Yeah, so iodine is often found in sort of dairy products, but it's also found in things like white fish as well. So again, a lot of the children I see, again, if they've had an allergy or they don't have any, milk in their or any dairy in their diet, maybe they don't like it either. And again, I find that for a lot of children, my children's probably an exception, but for a lot of children, they don't like fish either. They don't like the texture or the smell of it as well. So again, they might be lacking iodine as well, which again is important for the thyroid as well. So again, a really important nutrient that's often overlooked as well.
I can imagine for the teenage girls that you see, I guess they could be low in iron because they start menstruating. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. And again, they have really high iron requirements as well. And often I think at that age as well, they're much more influenced by friends. They're not necessarily having, in primary schools, often children have the school dinners as well, where they're reasonably well balanced and they have to comply with, you know, certain regulations in terms of the amount of iron and zinc, things like that they have in those meals. Whereas with teenagers, it's much harder to control what they're necessarily going to eat, or they are eating with friends as well. So again, and because their iron requirements are so high, it can be a really challenging time.
I can imagine all of these nutrient deficiencies can lead to so many different types of signs and symptoms. And we'll go on to talk a bit about that in terms of what to look out for in your kids, potential signs of nutrient deficiencies, and what you could do to in the diet to get those nutrients in after a few messages from our commercial partners.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Dora Walsh on Nutrition for Me on UK Health Radio, your global feel-good radio. And I'm speaking to Emma Shafcutt from Dietitians with a Difference. I'm talking about super nutrition for super kids. We've been talking about all the different things that mums and dads face with children. So from fussy eaters, nutrient deficiencies, nutritional needs throughout the different stages of a child's life, as well as adolescence. And we were talking about all those different nutrients. So for example, the iron, the zinc, the vitamin D, the vitamin A, the calcium, the iodine, and how they're needed at all those different stages of child development. So tell me, Emma, what are the signs that we can sometimes notice in our children or adolescents that may tell us that they may be lacking in some nutrients? I know you mentioned sometimes children come to you and they look fine in terms of they're on the right weight and everything, they are eating, but they're really tired. What else do we see?
Yeah, so I would say, yeah, definitely the tiredness with iron, because anemia is obviously one of the most common nutrients that we deficiencies that we see. So yeah, the tiredness, pale, obviously affects often the immune system as well. So sometimes they're more prone to picking up bugs as well. And also sometimes in younger children as well, particularly with iron, we can see it also has an effect on their appetite as well. So it often means that it's kind of a bit of a vicious cycle as well. So they're already a fussy eater, and then they get more and more fussy, and they're more and more restrictive. And again, because their iron levels are low, it can have a real impact on their appetite as well. So that's really important. Zinc's another one that can also affect appetite as well, and again has a big impact on immunity as well. So again, we see that in a lot of children struggling with zinc deficiencies as well. Calcium's another one. With calcium, you can't really have a blood test in the same way you can with, for example, with something with anemia. Your body tries to keep the calcium, the pH levels in your body sort of very balanced. So what will happen is we'll draw calcium from your bones to maintain that calcium in the blood. So what tends to happen is you tend to sometimes see children who've lost a tooth, or they've just suddenly broken a bone, but not, you know, had an accident or fallen. They've just broken a bone. Sometimes that can be a sign that they've got really low calcium. Just to reassure parents, this tends to be in the very, very restrictive kind of eater children, rather than you sort of don't want to worry lots of parents there. But yeah, that's another one that sometimes can happen. Vitamin A as well is another one that's quite common. Again, that can affect eyesight as well. So we have had cases where children have been really restrictive eaters, and again, they've ended up with issues with nighttime blindness as well. So again, these nutrients can be really, really important in children's diets.
It's so good to know what to look out for, isn't it? And we talked about how to get some nutrition in. You might not suddenly become like the most amazingly healthy eater, but there are little tricks that you can use to support that nutritional intake. We talked about fortified foods and their uses. Let's talk a bit also about the food sources of these nutrients. So iron, you've mentioned, there's red meat, there's the chickpeas, there's the lentils. You can get them from fortified cereals. But what about iodine and zinc? For parents that are interested in supporting their children with getting more of those nutrients into their diet, where can they find those nutrients in terms of the foods that they could choose?
So iodine would be any kind of like dairy source as well. So that's a really good source. And also white fish as well is a really high source of iodine as well. You can get it in things like seaweed and iodized salt as well. But again, the levels can be really, really high sometimes in the seaweed. So it's just being a bit careful on, how much they have of things like that. And also, to be fair, not sure about your child, but there's no way I would get my child to eat something
No.
like a seaweed because I think she's not going to eat that. So it's kind of
No, but
unrealistic.
I know my daughter loves salt, to be honest. So,
Yeah.
and I do add a bit of salt to her food. I think a little bit is okay. So I guess the iodized salt's a good idea.
So yeah, and then with covered, yeah, with zinc and stuff. So again, it's in a lot of animal-based foods as well. So again, if they're having meat, they're having some kind of dairy in their diet, should be able to get, as long as they're having a variety of food, I think, with zinc. And again, it is often in seafood as well, zinc as well. So again, sometimes children don't eat much seafood. So again, sometimes that could be why they're low in zinc as well.
What about vitamin A? What are your favorite sources of vitamin A?
So vitamin A can obviously be found in probably the most common one that people know about is things like carrots or orange vegetables and things like that as well. So if they like peppers, things like that, red peppers, orange peppers, but carrots is probably one of the best ones. And sweet potatoes is another really good source. My little girl actually prefers sweet potatoes to actual potatoes because she thinks they're much sweeter and they taste nicer. So again, sometimes small changes like that can help with vitamin A as well.
Yes.
But we do also recommend any child from 6 months to five is also given a vitamin A supplement as well.
Oh, you must see it as really, really crucial.
Yeah, because again, it's a really, really essential nutrient at that age.
Definitely for the eyesight development, for the immune system, for the skin.
Yeah.
I really like it for skin. I think it's wonderful when I see when girls that come to me and they have acne. I love zinc and vitamin A for that. I find it really works well on the skin. So yeah, these nutrients are so important. And you also mentioned calcium. So obviously that's from milk. But for people that don't like milk, I heard, Emma, that broccoli is a very good source of calcium. Is that right?
Yeah, broccoli is quite a good source of calcium as well. Yeah, green vegetables are a good source of calcium as well. And also, the only thing with sometimes with green vegetables is because they've got phytates in them, they can affect absorption of the calcium as well. So again, they are a good source, but also other good sources of calcium as well is things like tofu as well. So if it's set in calcium, that can be a really good source as well. And if they like anything like fish with bones in as well. So if you have like tinned salmon, because it's got the little bones in it, or like scampi, white bait, things like that. Again, if anything that's got tiny little fish bones in sometimes can be a good source of calcium.
Yeah.
And then obviously you've got all your plant milks as well, and your like the oats and the soya and the coconut as well. As long as they're fortified with calcium, which I always advise, and I always advise is to not choose the organic versions of those, because they're not fortified with the calcium and the vitamin D and the
Yeah.
iodine and things like that. So if you can pick the non-organic versions of those plant drinks, then that's a good way of getting calcium in.
It's so good to talk to you about this because, you'd naturally go for the organic because you think, oh, I don't want those pesticides, but they're not allowed to add those nutrients in
No.
to fortify it because it has to be totally natural, which I think is wonderful too. But for a child that maybe needs these nutrients, it's good to go for that fortified version. As you say, especially if they're not having milk or any type of dairy, and it will be fortified with the calcium, the iodine, etc. So definitely good idea to look at the labels, isn't it?
Yeah.
So now we've talked about all of these key nutrients, and I hope listeners, you've taken note. What about you did mention supplementation? It sounds like you do recommend supplementation to fill the gaps. Is that right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Because again, for a lot of these children that I see, yeah, in an ideal world, you'd want them to eat, plates of loads of different vegetables and all these different, all these different variety of food. But, they're not at that stage. And sometimes we just need to start with where they are and addressing those gaps in their diet and giving them some iron and some zinc and some other key nutrients that they might be low in as well. So yeah, I'm very pro supplementation if the child's diet needs it. And like I said, between 6 months and 5 years, we always recommend A and D. And there's been changes recently with that new report that I was talking about not necessarily needing vitamin C as much because a lot of children are getting enough vitamin C. But at the moment, the guidelines haven't fully changed yet. I think they're due to change soon. But yeah, at the moment, we still advise A, C, and D.
Yeah, so important. I'm definitely an advocate of supplements. I love nutrition and getting it all from the food, and I'm always doing my best with myself and my daughter and my family to get that nutrition in. But I've always been a fan of supplementation because I do think that it is sometimes hard to get all the nutrition from food for various reasons, whether it be fussy eating, being busy, digestion might not be so good at absorbing the nutrition. It could be so many reasons. So it's always good to have that insurance of a nutrient. I was looking at the Revive Active range of nutrients, and they have a couple of nutrients for children. There's the Junior Revive and also the Teen Revive. And what I love about them when I was looking at them is that the junior ones in the powder, well, they're both in powder, and they just work really well. I mean, the junior one has 22 active ingredients, 12 vitamins, 6 minerals, 4 fruit and vegetable powders, beta glucans, fiber, life-friendly bacteria, and choline also. And all these nutrients support the body in different ways, whether it be energy, immunity, mental performance, and it's all in one sachet. And that one for the Junior Revive is from 4 to 12 years old. Have you seen that product?
Yeah, I have. I've been sent some samples. Yeah, and I've actually tried it out on my little girl as well. And she quite liked the, she's obviously 8, so she tried the sachets. But I do like the way that they're powdered as well. But also, you could mix them into things. So, for children who struggle with the taste of some vitamins, which a lot of children I do see do struggle. So, again, being able to add it into things like yogurt can be quite a good way. So, they don't necessarily have to drink a large amount of a powder or anything else, could be is a really good way of getting those vitamins into them.
Yeah, I mean, what I love about it, especially for my daughter, she never knew she was taking it because the Junior, it's flavor free. So basically, you can add it to anything. And I'm a super big fan of juicing, which I'm sure you probably are too. I mean, what child doesn't like a nice strawberry and banana juice? Probably not many. And you just put it in, or you put it into your cereal, you put it into the yogurt, as you say. And it's that kind of just making sure that they're getting all their nutrients. You kind of breathe a sigh of relief, don't you? Yeah. And they also have the Teen Revive as well. And that one is a tropical flavor and it has 23 active ingredients. So 12 vitamins, 6 minerals, 4 fruit and vegetable powders, also the fiber, the beta glucans. So with these prebiotic fibers, it's the good bacteria that feeds off the prebiotic. So the probiotic bacteria feeds off prebiotic fibers, and that's very good for gut health. And that's what I really love about that because they're enhancing that formulation, not just be nutrients, but also those fibers and that gut support, which is so important for the immune system as well. We now know about the connection between the gut and the immune system.
There's so much more research coming out about that as well at the
Yeah.
moment as well. And it's nice that they've got a probiotic in them, whereas often with, parents, sometimes I recommend a probiotic for them as well, but it's quite nice that they're in together.
Yes, to do everything all in one is so much easier and it's cheaper as well. Rather than buying two products, you just get one product. It's got everything in it. It's in that kind of food base because it's got these pear juice powder, the pineapple juice powder. It's amazing. And as you say, you just mix it into your juice or your food and you take it in. So yeah, I really do like that one. Did do you have a teenager in your family that you tried it?
I don't, yeah. I've only got one child, yeah. So I haven't got a teenager at the moment. I'd say she's probably getting more like a teenager, but not that far off.
I'm just saying, I keep looking up stuff. I spoke to somebody recently. I said, she's getting a bit, talking back a bit lately. And she said,
Yeah, I get a lot of that.
she's 10. She's now moving into, what is it, the tween zone. So
Yeah.
she, yeah, I'm thinking I've got to support the nervous system here. But I gave the teen one to my niece, who's 13 now, and she really liked it. And my sister was pleased. And I kind of given a lot of supplements, which is really lovely in this job. And I kind of like to share them out and see what people think. And that she really did like it a lot. But yeah, it's been lovely talking to you, Emma. And I really do appreciate you coming on the show. We've been talking about super nutrition for super kids. And to finish off, what are your 5 top mantras when tackling children's nutrition?
So I think in terms of the top 5, one would be all about moderation and not let stressing parents out completely, that you have to make extreme changes. Sometimes it can be little tiny changes can make all the difference. Anything to do with food play or having fun with food can be really, really important. So the more fun you can have, the better. I think also supplementation as well, if they are missing essential nutrients like iron, zinc, and things like that, and they need some help, because sometimes it's unrealistic to jump from, maybe chicken nuggets and things like that that they are eating. So sometimes it's all about making small changes. Sometimes we need supplements in between. Having a variety as well, so making sure that you rotate the foods that they're having, so you're not always serving the same food. I mean, it's important that you always give them some preferred option, that's something that they can eat, but again, just giving as much variety of food as you can. And then I think, about some foods better than no food. So again, like we talked about with the ultra processed foods, not stressing about every single, food, and sometimes things like fortified breakfast cereals are a really good option for your child.
Love the message. It's so clean and direct, and it's a real relief for parents to hear this, myself included. It's good to be reminded. And listeners, I hope you've enjoyed listening to the show as much as I've enjoyed presenting it. Join us again next week on the Nutrition for Me show. Thank you so much, Emma Shafkat from Dietitians with a Difference. And today's show is brought to you in association with Revive Active, our show sponsor, Ireland's number one super supplement brand. Enjoy Revive Active's range of super supplements and feel great. Revive Active has teamed up with UK Health Radio to offer listeners an exclusive discount so you can test their supplements for yourself and start to feel super. Just go to reviveactive.com and use Radio 20 to get 20% off their entire range, including Junior Revive and Teen Revive. And you can find out more about Revive Active on their website. Until next week, thank you so much and goodbye.